Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 442 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. That is the truth. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. There is quite a bit to get through, so we're going to start here at the Wayne State Fieldhouse in Detroit, Michigan. This one took place on DAZN. It took place last Thursday, the 28th of March. We saw Vladimir Shishkin move to 16-0, a TKO for him in the 7th round of a scheduled 10 against the ever-so-tough Mike Guy, who gets stopped, I believe, for just the second time in his pro career. He's now 12-8 with a draw. You know, he went in there and obviously lost on points to John Ryder. He is a very, very, very tough guy. He's up there in age. But yeah, man, Shishkin kind of set a bit of a pace that he didn't like. It was a very small ring, and yeah, he didn't really have to work too hard to find him. So yeah, really impressive performance there from Shishkin. That's a little bit of a statement, because like I say, Mike Guy don't really get stopped normally. Also on that card, we saw Shojohan Ergashev move to 24-1. He came back with a bang. He was coming off a loss last time out to Subriel Matias. He got stopped in that fight there. But he came back with a first round knockout against Juan Huertas, who's now 17-5 with a draw. Ergashev looked real good there in the first round, now 24-1. Moving now to Friday, it took place at the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona, USA. It was live on ESPN. I don't know if you saw any of this card, Eddie, at all. If you did, then by all means, jump in. I'm going to start with the undercard. We saw Emiliano Vargas move to 9-0, a unanimous decision for him over 6 rounds. I think that is only the second time he's gone the distance in his 9 fights. He was able to beat unanimously, like I say, over 6, Nelson Hampton, who's now 10-9. Also on the card, it was an easy night's work in the end for Richard Torres Jr., a first round knockout against Don Hainsworth, who's now 18-9 with a draw. Yeah, I mean, he went in there and blasted him out. Like I say, he's always exciting. It was another demolition job. Referee ended up waving it off after Don took a good few clean shots. Yeah, people are asking for a step up now for Richard Torres. Also on the card as well, we should mention Raymond Muratala, now 20-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Zolesani Ndongani, now 31-5. I did expect Muratala to stop him because, like I say, Ndongani was coming off a stoppage loss to, Arnold Barboza. So he got stopped by him. I expected Muratala to be a little bit too heavy-handed. I thought he'd probably stop him. But in the end, like I say, unanimous decision over 10 rounds. I actually tweeted on Twitter/X the other day and I said, here's a bunch of, you know, good betting prices for the weekend. And I threw out a few bets and the odds and stuff. And one of the things I did say in that tweet was 11-5 for Muratala to win on points, which in the end happened. So you could have got just, well, 5.5 times your stake, plus your stake back if you would have backed that there. So yeah, that was really big odds, like I say. And Ndongani is generally quite tough. And that one fight there, I think he's now going to have to go back to being, in my mind, extremely durable, despite that one blip against Arnold Barboza. Yeah, like I say, went the distance with with Devin Haney, and he's the only man to have taken Ernesto Mercado the distance. That's something I completely forgot about, actually. So, yeah, anyway, that is it. So, a good win in the end. Well, a flat performance from Muratella. I wouldn't really say it was a good win. It was a bit of a disappointing performance. There wasn't too much to get excited about. Like I say, it's probably a little bit of a kind of... Like a bit of a speed bump, actually, in his climb to sort of the top of the division. But yeah, you know, it's good stuff for Ndongeni. I'm sure he's going to get another nice payday fighting a good fighter on the come up. He doesn't offer too much offensively, but, you know, like I say, he's a hard man to pin down and get out of there. Right, moving up the card once again, Lindolfo Delgado moved to 20-0, a KO for him in round 7 against Carlos Sanchez, who's now 25-3, Sanchez down in round 5 and 7, good win for Delgado. Also on the card, Sunisa Estrada now 26-0, but more importantly, she's now the undisputed minimum weight female world champion. A unanimous decision over 10-2s against Yocasta Valle, now 30-3. Really good fight. You know, aside from the head clash that opened a cut on Valle, I think it was in the first or second round. But no, it was a good fight. I think the cut definitely bothered Valle, which was a bit of a shame. But yeah, look, you know, it was a good fight, like I say, good action fight. I felt that Estrada was the more skilled fighter, but Valle, when letting her hands go in combinations, was causing a lot of trouble and definitely swaying the judges. I thought it was a really close fight. I felt it could have gone either way. I saw, you know, social media scores. Some people had it 7-3 for Estrada. Some people had it 6-4 for Valle. And it wasn't too surprising to see Estrada get it. Obviously, on a top-ranked show, it ended up being unanimous. I think 7-3 across the board, if my memory serves me right. But yeah, good win. And, you know, good again, like I alluded to on last week's show. There was a bit of bad blood there between Estrada and, you know, Golden Boy and Yocasta Val. And also a trainer as well had something to do with Sunisa when she was younger. So there was a lot of bad blood. There was a lot of things that could have got in the way of that fight taking place. But thankfully, boxing won, and so did the fans. And we got a good fight. And we got, you know, one true undisputed champion. So she is definitely the main lady there, Estrada. I'm sure she'll be looking to move up. What else did we have? Yeah, the main event. Oscar Valdez now 32-2. A TKO win for him in round 7 against Liam Wilson, now 13-3. It was for the vacant, I think it was vacant, WBO Interim World Super Featherweight title. Yeah, one of Valdez's best performances in a long time. And, you know, he wasn't bad in his loss to Navarrete. You know, he put up a good fight there, but obviously lost the fight. But he was excellent the other night. You know, his jab was unbelievable. And it's always impressive, I'm sure you'll agree as well, Eddie. You know, it's always impressive to see a much smaller man be better with his jab than the bigger, taller, longer guy. And yeah, his body shots were lethal. His hooks in general were lethal. Liam Wilson took some huge shots throughout the fight, and I give him a lot of credit also, you know. He's got a heck of a chin, he's got a big heart, and his record doesn't look the prettiest right now. Like I said, 13-3, but, you know, he's been, for me, I don't want to kick him while he's down, but he's been handed enough opportunities, you know, on a silver platter, and yeah, I think like... let him kind of sit on the shelf for a little bit now. You know, he's been skipping over guys and getting a shot, you know, because his manager or promoter have done a fantastic job with him. But yeah, the finish for Valdez was brutal. I mean, he was just smashing Wilson's head left to right again and again and again. And the referee saved him big time, I felt. It was a great stoppage. But yeah, Valdez, as we know, he's a real warrior. He's a throwback fighter. He'll fight anyone. And on another note, I don't think Valdez gets enough credit. I mean, he's been one of the best fighters in terms of excitement in recent years. One of the best fighters to watch, in my opinion. It's always a great fight with Oscar Valdez. I mean, I go right back to his fights with the likes of Scott Quigg, you know, boxing with a broken jaw, breaking Scott Quigg's nose. Like, the guy is a serious, serious Mexican warrior, and he's fought everyone, you know. He didn't look too great against Shakur Stevenson. That was probably the one fight of his that wasn't as exciting as all the others, but he always comes to bring it and puts on a fantastic, you know, fantastic show. And like I say, it was more of what we're used to from Oscar Valdez. So yeah, happy for him to get the win. Happy for him to be back again. What else do we have? Let's move now to the Arena Armeech in Sofia, Bulgaria. One fight to mention over here, we saw Kubrat Pulev return to action. He's now 31-3, a unanimous decision against Ihor Shevazutsky, who's now 11-2. It went 12 rounds there. Yeah, obviously we know Shevazutsky got stopped, I think, in a couple of rounds to Martin Bacoli, so I guess that kind of tells you where Kubrat Pulev is at. If you didn't already know, I slated him massively when he boxed Andrew Warzyk, and he's completely done. He's there for the taking. I don't even know why he's still fighting now. Must have made plenty of money out of the game. I don't know why we're still seeing him fight, but I guess if he's getting easy fights like this, I mean, I don't think Shevazutsky had much notice for the fight. But yeah, like I say, if he's getting easy paydays like this, then maybe he wants to hang around for a few more. Moving now to the YouTube Theater in Inglewood, California, USA. This one took place on DAZN as well on Saturday night. Let's touch on the undercard briefly. Alexis Rocha with a KO win in round 7. He did get Frederick Lawson out there in the end. Rocha now 24-2, Lawson 30-5. Lawson's corner actually stopped the fight. Got to him in the end. Lawson showed, you know, a few elements to his game, actually, the other night. I think Rocha would have probably overlooked him massively. They couldn't stop talking about that first round knockout loss he suffered at the hands of Virgil Ortiz that shouldn't have even been stopped. You know, you can't read into that, simply. It was such a bad stoppage, you can't read into that, you know. It's as if, like, Rocha kind of looked to that and thought, okay, I'll be able to get him out in similar time. You know, I don't think he legitimately got stopped against Ortiz. So, you know, this was never going to go as smoothly, I don't think. But yeah, you know, it was all Rocha. I mean, I'm gonna throw that out there. It's not like it was a competitive fight. It was all Rocha. But yeah, Lawson, like I say, showed a lot of heart again. Very gutsy, very game. And earned his payday, you know, earned his payday. I'd like to see him again. I don't think he's as bad as they made him out to be. And, like I say, provided a stiff test. And for Rocha, it's back to winning ways. He was coming off a loss last time out as well, so it's good for him on the comeback trail. And the main event, Arsene Gulamirian, now 27-1. He loses his O. He loses his WBA Super World Cruiserweight title to Gilberto Ramirez, who's now 46-1. And he's now dethroned an undefeated champion at cruiserweight. We don't often see guys, and I'm going to come to you here, Eddie, move from super middleweight right up to cruiserweight and win titles all along that, you know, along that path. Like I say, champion at 168, now a champion at 200 pounds. Unbelievable for Gilberto Ramirez. It goes to show, like, that size. You know, he can really hang with the bigger guys, even though he was down at 168. I mean, he was a bigger guy, but how he would boil down, I just don't understand how on earth he made that weight. And like I say, these days, you don't really see this happen too often. But very, very good performance from Ramirez. I'm guessing you probably didn't see it, Eddie. But like I say, a lot of people were picking Gulamirian. I saw people on social media saying Gulamirian's going to snap him in half. And it couldn't have been further from the truth. He went in there and he dominated Gulamirian from the off. And he closed strong as well. It was a really, really good performance. And like I say, history maker for sure.
Wow. Congratulations to him. Obviously did a great job. I didn't get a chance to see it, but it's crazy to say that, you know, after seeing him lose to Bivol, and you know, even though he won titles and he's been a championship level fighter, to now see him all the way up at cruiserweight. And listen, cruiserweight is only one stop from heavyweight. They even have Bridgerweight as well. So I mean, shit, you never know. He might want to try his hand at becoming a champion at that level, or even heavyweight. So I mean, you know, there's you know, possibilities are endless for him, seeing that, you know, he's gone all the way up that far and actually, like you said, Joe, looked good and winning, good performance all around. I guess dominating performance from you. So it's a good thing. It's an awesome thing, like you said. But when you said it's hard to believe somebody from 168 pounds could go all the way up there and still be like able to hang with the big guys, you gotta understand a lot of these guys, even at 168, even to 100, down even to 154 pounds, some of these guys literally walk around over 200 or around 200 pounds. And for them to then be able to just train with no worry of cutting weight and just being able to just go in the gym and not even think about what's going on as far as the weight is concerned, just hit the bags, just train, just spar, and literally can feel completely 100% in how they, you know, and how they're performing, and only worried, only really worried, because a lot of times with these guys, the training camp is like a fat camp for them. You know what I'm saying? Because they got to drop like sometimes 20 and 30 pounds in a month just to get on weight. Which is one of the things I think happened with Errol Spence when his fight with Terrence Crawford. Not to say that that's an excuse for him losing, but regardless, it's just I think that, you know, with him moving up, that just takes a lot of the pressure off of him having to, you know, make that weight cut. So to me, I can understand why his performance was so good and why he was able to compete and why he's able to compete at the level he's competing at, moving up in weight. Because, like, you know, you look at guys like James Toney, even in the past, who started at 154 pounds and then move all the way up to heavyweight. And to be fair, at heavyweight, he was kind of lazy, but it just had the high skill level and would just literally spar rounds on end. But, you know, anyway, I say all that to say that, you know, I could see him being successful up at these weights because of his pace being faster, and also because now he doesn't have to worry about that crazy weight cut come fight time. So yeah, congratulations to him. Hopefully he can keep on doing these things, maybe even move up further if he wants.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just think obviously that jump from light heavyweight to cruiserweight, 25 pounds, is such a big jump. I mean, you know, there would be normally a couple of weight divisions in between that gap. And you touched on the likes of Errol Spence, who I think probably walks around at about 175, something like that, in between fights. You know, he's gone down to welterweight. Obviously, physically couldn't get down to 140, just like Ramirez probably couldn't physically get down to 160. So he settled at 168, and Spence settled at 147. Could Spence become a champion at 154? You know, who knows? But would he be a champion at his walk around weight, 175? No chance in my mind at all. Whereas this guy is doing it, so I don't know. I give him extra credit.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Like, obviously, your walk around weight is, you know, when you're sitting at home eating, you might train 3 or 4 times a week, maybe just to stay with keep the maintenance on. Obviously, that's not ideal to fight at that weight, your walk around weight, but what it does is it frees you up to do some things that maybe you couldn't do before. Eat in certain ways. As far as, like, you know, even when you start to cut your diet down and you start focusing on certain aspects of your diet, you could think about bulking more, feeling a little stronger, you know what I mean? And a little more emphasis on weightlifting and just in general, you know, like putting more armor on your body. And what happens is, like I said, when you move up in weight, your pace is so much faster, you know, because of what you've done. Like, for example, Errol Spence's pace at 147 pounds is going to be much different than if he was at 160. You know what I mean? Maybe not that much as 154, but 160 would be a little different, and especially 68. The only issue would be, obviously, those guys are going to end up being bigger. Like, as you look at Ramirez being all the way now up to cruiserweight, you're going to be fighting guys like that. But what I'm saying is it would give him an advantage in a specific way, whereas he'd be a little bit, maybe, dare I say, faster, not faster, but more of a faster pace with a bigger guy who's not ready to throw that many punches per round. You know what I'm saying? That's the only thing that I think would benefit, on top of the fact that now he can, because, you know, he can concentrate on being a little bit bigger and focus a little more on strength and adding to that, and not being having such a huge gap in disparity in speed. Whereas in sometimes at 147, Spencer would probably be at a disadvantage in speed because that's just not one of his things. But yeah, we were saying similar things, but yeah, it's to me, it's a good look for him. And obviously for Ramirez, because he's been doing pretty damn good moving up and weight like he has.
Moving on, let's move now to the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. Going to touch on the undercard. Julio Cesar Martinez with a majority decision victory after 12 rounds. He's now 20-4. He was able to beat Angelino Cordova, now 18-1 with a draw. He loses his O there. Cordova down twice in the third round. I saw little bits of this fight. I didn't see every single thing. I saw just little bits. But obviously in the end, those two knockdowns in round three won, you know, Martinez the fight. Like I say, a draw on one card, and he won on the other two cards by 2 points. So that 10-7 round was the round, was the definitive round, the deciding round. I can't say I saw lots of that to give an accurate review of it. Moving on, though, Erislandy Lara with a win. He's now 30-3 with 3 draws. A KO for him in round 2 against Michael Zarafa of Australia, now 31-5. It was a defense of Lara's WBA middleweight world title. He's 40 years of age. I think he's going to be 41 in a few days' time. What a fantastic way to celebrate your birthday week. Amazing from Lara. He said he'd get the job done within 6 rounds. He was coming off almost 2 years of inactivity, and he gets it done, like I say, within 2 rounds. He seems to be weirdly getting better with age, and these knockouts are starting to rack up now. I think he's knocked out 3 of his last 4. He was never known as a knockout puncher, and to think he's one of, if not certainly on the top of my head, he's the oldest world champion in boxing, but I don't know if there's an older one off the top of my head. What a way to, you know, to be turning 41. That is that. What else did we have on this card? We saw Brian Mendoza. He racked up a loss. He's now 22-4. A unanimous decision in favor of Sergei Bohachuk, now 24-1. It was for the interim WBC World Super Welterweight title. Sergei Bohachuk goes the distance in a fight for the first time in 25. Again, this wrecked a few of my bets. He'd never gone into round 9. He'd only gone as far as round 8, Bohachuk. It was a scheduled 12 against the ever-so-tough Brian Mendoza, who obviously, as we've seen, knocked out Sebastian Fundora. Bohachuk, apart from his big punch, I didn't think he had too much to his game, but I've got to say, I was very, very impressed with him. Really was. I thought his gas tank would be a factor in the later rounds if it even went that far. And yeah, he wrecked a few of my bets because I just bet on him simply to not go the distance. So that would cover him getting knocked out or him winning by knockout. But yeah, Mendoza had never been stopped, and he wasn't to be stopped here. Like I say, he lost in the end quite wide, unanimous to Bohachuk, who I think has proved to us the other night that he's a fighter that's, you know, improving. Even though he's getting these knockouts, he's answered the question, can he go 12 rounds and beat a good fighter? He certainly can. So a really good win for him. Also on the card, Rolando Romero, now 15-2. He was TKO'd in round 8 by Isaac Pitbull Cruz, now 26-2 with a draw. Romero dethroned Cruz, the new WBA super lightweight world champion. I'm going to run through it just briefly. Rolando Romero obviously hurt quite bad in the very first round. I did, though, give Romero round 2. I thought he came out and beat Cruz to the punch in round 2. Quicker hands, and it was a smart round from him. Isaac Cruz, for me, and I'm sure you're going to have something to say here, Eddie, but, you know, he's just a plodder. He's just a plodder. Obviously, Rolly Romero had a point deducted in round five for excessive holding. I felt it was ridiculously unfair. I felt that Thomas Taylor, you know, was bang out of order, actually, for that. I didn't see any warnings prior to that. Every single time that they'd get tied up as well, Thomas Taylor was running in there straight away within half a second to break them up. It was almost as if he wanted Romero to get knocked out. Like, there was no break in the action. I felt he was really against Rolly Romero. And yeah, obviously the holding and the turning and stuff was part of Rolly's game plan. I didn't think it was excessive at all. But yeah, you know, when Rolly was actually boxing, he was having a lot of success. I think Isaac Cruz is, you know, his feet are slow. Like I say, I think he's flat-footed. He had a big round in round seven, obviously, Cruz, for sure. Yeah, Rolly was out on his feet, and then obviously in the eighth and final round, the tape on Cruz's glove came loose, and he goes to his corner. Thomas Taylor, this is another thing I have to mention, he's trying to hurry the corner up, and he's actually saying, because obviously Rolly Romero got hurt at the end of round seven, so here we are in round eight, tapes come loose, he wants them to tape up his gloves so quick, and Thomas Taylor can actually be heard saying, "You're giving him time to recover." I thought that was shocking refereeing. You know, I thought he was biased the whole fight anyway, but to actually say, like, "You're giving him time to recover, hurry up," like, it was as if it was the last leg in his parlay or something for him to get knocked out. I felt he was constantly on Rolly's case. And of course, Cruz hurts Rolly in the eighth round and Taylor jumps in. I thought it was a tiny bit premature, that stoppage, just a tiny bit, not too much to complain about. But yeah, Cruz, you know, he's just flat-footed. Great chin, he's made of steel, he hits hard, and that is enough, it seems, to beat a lot of fighters. I think, obviously, we've seen him lose to Tank, who was a little guy, you know, but with a much, much better boxing IQ. But I think the kryptonite for Cruz would be if he comes across someone with a good jab, someone who's tall and long, you know, and has good feet, he'll look so bad. But he hasn't, in my... you know, from what I can remember, hasn't really boxed anyone like that. I don't know what you thought of it, Eddie, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you because, you know, we've all seen Rolly. Rolly's not the best boxer. In fact, he's not. He wouldn't be considered a boxer at all. He'd just be more of a plodding type puncher who has to resort to boxing in certain situations, somewhat like Tomas Adamic. As much as, you know, I respect him and everything, he wasn't really a boxer. He was made into a boxer because he moved up to the heavyweight division. And in a lot of cases, guys have to do things because of who they're facing. And if they're able to make the adjustment and make it seamlessly, then obviously that tells you how great a fighter they are, or how good they can be, or, you know, or they have the ability to adapt. Rolly is not that type of fighter, really. And he was kind of forced into that, and it put him in a situation where now he has to figure it out kind of as the fight's going on. And this is why I said, and I think we talked, I don't know if you remember, I said I really didn't like this fight for Rolly because of the kind of fighter he is, the kind of style he has. He's a puncher, right? He's a puncher who likes to, you know, get guys on the move and force them to, force them into a situation where they don't want to get caught by him. You know what I'm saying? Like, even when you watch him fight Tank, Tank's IQ and his skill level is high enough to where he's like, yeah, he's a hell of a puncher, but he don't got it upstairs. There's no way he's going to be able to, you know what I mean, figure this out throughout the course of a fight and figure out how to land his shot. And so now that he's on the other side of that, how is he going to turn himself into the boxer he needs to beat a guy like Cruz? He's not going to be able to do what Tank can do, and that's go from being a puncher, a boxer puncher, to just a pure boxer in order to survive and win a decision. That's just not his game. So I didn't like the matchup of, you know, Cruz versus Rolly Romero for if I'm a supporter of Romero, because I just knew Cruz was going to be too tough, too much on the front, you know, too much on the front foot, too good of a chin. That's really the biggest key. He was going to be able to take what Rolly had. And a lot of times, even if you watch the fight where he fought with the older guy, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry.
Barroso.
Right, there you go. When he was fighting with Barroso, you could see that the guy was older or looked older or whatever, but he was able to take what he had and was able to give it back, you know, almost tenfold to a degree. And that's what kind of made Rolly have to be like, damn. And then he got that favorable stoppage, which kind of have helped him survive and go on to the next fight. But you look at that fight, then you look at this one, and then it makes more sense. You understand what I'm saying? It makes more sense. And this is like, when you look at these type of fights, I think these are easy fights to pick. Like, if I was going to be, if I was going to look, be doing a parlay, I would have picked him to get stopped, you know, mid to late rounds, honestly, by Cruz. I just didn't think he would be able to deal with the punching power, the pressure over the course of the of a long fight. And I figured he would get caught either mid, late rounds. He got caught early in the first round and got hurt, which doesn't surprise me either. But I was figuring after, you know, second half of the fight, he starts to look at that wall closing in. He's not able to figure it out. He can't keep his jab on him enough to do enough damage to keep him off. And Cruz gets close. He starts to land some shots. And that's exactly what happened. And it's just, when you look at Rolly, he really needs to go back to the drawing board heavily and start to really develop. Now, I'm not trying to tell you to say you got to change his whole game, because it's kind of hard to do that at this stage in his career, but he definitely really has to start to try to learn how to develop a serious jab and make it a serious weapon for him, and open up ways and also improve his footwork a little bit too, so that way he doesn't get caught in situations where he doesn't know what to do or he's stuck and he just has to hold. You understand what I'm saying? And of course, the main thing with a lot of these guys don't really focus enough on, and that's defense. He needs to understand better how to defend and what range to defend and what to look for in certain situations, because he just wasn't able to pick Cruz apart. And I think Cruz is going to be a tough guy for just about anyone to a degree, because of his toughness and his ability to keep coming forward. But like you said, Joe, he gets with a guy who's a really smart boxer with a good jab and a great IQ and good defensive ability. He's gonna struggle in that kind of a fight, because you can see his offense coming. You know what he wants to do. You just got to be able to stop and kind of curb that, at least for parts of the round. You understand what I'm saying? Kind of like what Ray Leonard did with Marvin Hagler, even though Marvin Hagler was world's better skill-wise. You know, I'm just using that as an example. Is you got to figure it out. You got to figure out ways of kind of stemming the tide as the fight gets, you know, goes further, especially, you know, with that pressure. And it seems like Cruz doesn't stop. So, yeah, good performance by Cruz, but there is a lot of things that he needs to improve upon. But I just thought that was a bad matchup for Rolly.
Yeah, I have to agree. And moving to the main event, Tim Tzu loses his O. He's now 24-1. Wow, we've got a lot to talk about with this fight here. Obviously, for the vacant WBC and, of course, the WBO World Super Welterweight titles. The Towering Inferno in the other corner, Eddie, now 21-1 with a draw, a split decision victory over 12 rounds. You made a humongous point last week about you know, being a Sioux guy. You would be saying, don't fight Fandora. Couldn't be anything more opposite than Keith Thurman, a 6'6" southpaw puncher, the polar opposite to Keith Thurman. It's not a good move on such short notice, and you were right. Boy, oh boy, a huge, huge upset in terms of betting odds. But we made a big case for Fandora, especially you, Eddie.
Yeah, man, I hate to say I told you so in this scenario, but the reality of it is, man, now let's be completely honest. Do I think Tim Tzu would have lost the fight before the cut? No, I think Tim Tzu would have probably won maybe even going away, you know what I mean? Pretty lopsided the way the fight was looking early. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that things couldn't have changed regardless of the cut, but the reality of it is Tim Zhu looked really sharp, really good with his counterpunching early on, which was, like, let's just say the first round and toward in most of the second round. But the cut did happen. And Fundura did actually, for the first time from me ever seen him before, really stuck with his jab and his length. And it was refreshing. It was just showing just how good or how dangerous or how difficult he could be as a fighter when he actually does something that benefits his ability, his style, his size. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's sometimes a shame when you see guys. Like, I used to watch, and I loved Diego, man. You know, God rest his soul, and, you know, rest in peace. Great, great, all-time great action fighter, Diego Corrales. I used to watch him like, damn, man, if he just, you know, really uses his height or his length. And at that time, I didn't really understand so much about the how important range is as opposed to just height. And I think, you know, that was probably, I don't think his arms were that long, especially when you compare it to, like, him and Floyd Mayweather, who was much shorter but was just a more rangy guy. But what I'm saying is I used to always think, like, damn, wouldn't it be good for him to use his height, to use his reach, and actually start to develop his ability to box more. And when I look at Sebastian Fundura, now he has the reach, he has the length, he has the range. And very rarely did he ever use it. That was probably the reason why he has that one loss on his record. If you would have stuck to his range and his boxing, he might not have that loss. But, you know, in this situation, him being outboxed early, to be quite honest, and outfoxed and getting caught with good counter shots periodically, which is what Tim Zhu was doing, kind of forced him into a situation where he's like, yo, I can't really compete with this guy like that. I've got to start to do something different. So he started. And I mean, initially in the first few rounds, he was using jab periodically, but he didn't really, really stick to it like he did in this fight in the past. Like, he really stuck on using his jab, his range. And another thing he was doing that was pretty good, too, was he would throw that left hand out somewhat like in a jabbing kind of way too, like not necessarily for power, but to like land on him, just to put his hand on him and maybe even hit him in the head, push his head, so to speak, at times, and then even sometimes fire off it, which was really smart and really also elevated some of the things that were going on. Now, like I said, Tim Zhu had some difficulty seeing and you know, all that blood loss. I mean, but you know, don't take anything away from Fundura, because he was bleeding as well, you know, from the nose and mouth. So it was a crazy bloody fight. But both fighters showed an unbelievable heart and a will to win. And the fact that Tim Zhu, you know, was still competing with that gash in his head like that just shows what kind of fighter he is, and the fact that he's just willing to do things that some other guys aren't willing to do, which is a great thing. And same thing for Sebastian Fundura. And congratulations to him for winning a fight that I'm pretty sure most people didn't think he was going to win. And like I said, and the way he did it and how he stuck behind his jab and his boxing and you know, made some adjustments. It was just a good thing to see a young fighter do that has that ability, that has those options to actually use them for the benefit. And he did it on the best in the best situation, on the best stage that he possibly could have, winning two titles in the process. So congratulations to all involved. I think it was an excellent fight, you know, from skill wise to the blood and guts. It was just an all around good night, you know, for boxing fans in the main event. So yeah, good situation. And I wish them both the best in the future.
Yeah, good breakdown, Eddie. Yeah, I agree. You know, Tim Zhu started nice and sharp. picked up the first two rounds on my card. Obviously, towards the end of that second round, though, that is where he kind of ducked into Fandora's elbow. It was just a freak, you know, accident. And yeah, that cut, it looked like a bullet hole, you know, on the top of his head. The blood was pouring, you know, they were, I mean, I don't know if it was just bad cut work in the corner or just the cut was too severe or whatever, but you know, there's been a lot said about the fact that if they couldn't get it under control, then they should have just said, we can't see, and it would have gone down as a no contest. You know, in hindsight, definitely would have been the right thing to do. I know you're going to have something to say about that, Eddie. I'll come to you in a sec. 100% they should have done that now, looking back, obviously. And at the time, it went through my mind, you know, like it being so early on in the fight, I just thought to myself, you know, you can't carry on with a cut like that and it to just go away. You know, that's what I thought, and I end up being right. You know, I gave Fandora rounds 3 and 4. He literally started to take over from that cut. In round 5, Tim Su was boxing well again. You know, I think he'd settled down a bit after, you know, a couple of bad rounds and dealing with the cut. He was countering with the left hand. I gave him that 5th round. And yeah, I just think so much credit needs to be given to Fandora, like you said, Eddie, for boxing really smart, keeping it long, you know. Is something we don't really see, even though, you know, he should bring that into his game more often than just the other night. You know, it goes to show how effective he can be boxing like that. I thought he was really, really smart. Everything was behind the jab. And Sue was really struggling to get in range, which is mad because, again, Fandora usually just likes to have a fight in a phone booth. Yeah, massive credit to Fandora. He boxed really, really smart. I was really impressed. Credit to Tim, obviously, for continuing with such a bad cut and still throwing with bad intentions for the entirety of the fight. I am sure that, again, like you, it would have been a completely different fight had the cut not happened. But one thing I will say, and you can come in here in a sec, Eddie, from what I've heard, there was no rematch clause, but they kind of verbally agreed that they would have a rematch if Fandora were to win. And from what I'm hearing, according to his promoter, Sebastian Fandora's promoter, Samson Lukowicz, they're pretty much saying we're going to honour that gentleman's agreement and do a rematch. Now, a lot of people are saying Tim Su is going to be so much better in the rematch, blah, blah, blah. But I want to say, I think Sebastian Fandora is going to be a bit better in the rematch as well. Actually, a lot better in the rematch. Because from my opinion, he went into that fight knowing that he was up against it. He was coming off... you know, I don't know if he'd had a fight in between that stoppage loss or not. I'm not too sure, to Brian Mendoza. But I feel like he went into that fight, you know, knowing he's up against it. And I think he proved something to himself the other night. I felt like he grew in confidence as the fight progressed. And he'll know that the cut definitely played a part in him, you know, winning as I guess, comfortably as he did in the end. But I think that he'll go into that second fight with a lot of confidence. With a lot of confidence. And I think he'll be better for it as well. So I don't really like the idea that everyone's just saying, oh, Tim Su, he's going to, you know, come back and win that rematch 100%. I would not be so sure. I would not be so sure. And I wouldn't bet against Fandora doing the same thing next time. That's my opinion. Again, I don't know if you want to disagree with that, Eddie. I just felt he grew in confidence, and I'm sure you want to say a thing or two about that potential opportunity for a no contest.
I honestly, I agree 1,000,000% with what you just said. I think that it's the we used to have a saying, and it's not to say that Fandora is one of these kind of guys, but when they say you let a duck hang around, which would be, you know, a guy who's not very good, but been boxing all his life and still has some ability. You let a duck hang around, they grow in confidence, and then they become a difficult person to get out of it. So what happens is, in this situation, he's grown immensely in confidence. He now believes he could compete at that level. And why would he be
he hasn't been proven wrong. He's absolutely right. He's a big southpaw, big tall southpaw with power, and now the ability to use the size. He absolutely is going to come into this fight believing he can win.
And he 100%. He legitimately hurt Sue a few times as well.
Of course. I honestly thought that if the fight was going to be an upset, that was going to be the way that the upset was going to actually, you know, take place, was that he would catch Sue and get him out of there, not necessarily outbox him throughout the entirety of the fight, regardless of what the circumstances were. I thought that he was going to catch him and stop him. That would be his chance. Turns out that even in my estimation of being kind of somewhat right, I was still wrong, because I didn't think that he would actually stick to what he stuck, to his plan and the things that he did, and how he systematically, not to say took apart, but he seized control of the fight by utilizing his boxing ability and range. This is the kind of thing that you like to see in young fighters coming up, to say, okay, well, you know, hey, he's showing that now, as he's maturing as a fighter, he's turning into, going from being a contender or a prospect into now, from a prospect into a contender to now into a championship level fighter, where he's going to be fighting 12 rounds for the rest of his career. That's the kind of thing that you want to see in him. And it proved, and I mean, I'm looking at his whole situation with his father and his sister, and how they got a championship level situation going on in general within that family. So it's like there's a lot to live up to, and a lot of pressure that he has, maybe not necessarily put on by everyone else, but the expectations his dad has, his sister, the things that they wanted to see from him. And he lived up to him. And now why wouldn't he believe that next time he gets in there with Zoo that he could actually win the fight? Because he did. Regardless of the circumstances, he lived up to what he was supposed to live up to, which honestly wasn't very much, because I'm pretty sure most people thought he was going to get beat or stopped. So, but yeah, like I said, congratulations. And 100% I agree with you, Joe, what you said. He's guaranteed to go in there with the idea of going in there not just to win, but to dominate and leave no doubt this next time.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you touched on it. Him and his sister making serious, serious history there. Two siblings, brother and sister, both active world champions. One thing I will say as well is, yeah, he was genuinely, Fandora, coming off that stoppage defeat to Brian Mendoza. And also, he was 1 week away, 1 week shy of being out the ring for an entire year since that Mendoza fight as well. So almost a year out of the ring, coming off a stoppage loss, his only loss, and he gets in there, with about 10 days notice or whatever to again, step in with Tim Tsui. Unbelievable from Fandora. And I 100% believe he will be much, much tougher next time as well. Okay, moving on to the final two cards to mention. Let's start here at the O2 Arena in Greenwich, London, United Kingdom. It was a good card on Sky. Ben Whittaker moved to 7-0, a points win over 8 rounds against Leon Willens, who's now 7-2. Put up a really good fight, Leon Willens. copied a few of Ben's moves. Didn't let himself get humiliated in there. Ben Whittaker getting a lot of criticism off the back of this. I mean, last time he looked $1 million with all his flashiness and all the rest of it, but this time wasn't really working as smoothly. This guy Leon Willens obviously had a bit about him, and I think he's done enough to earn himself another TV slot somewhere. But yeah, I mean, obviously Ben Whittaker dominated, but he got caught with some nice shots from Willens, and it wasn't a clean sweep, if you like. Okay, moving on. Alan the Savage Babich moved to 12-1. Again, I said this would be the battle of the bad gas tank. Someone's going to gas out before 12 or 10 rounds, I should say. Alan Babich got the TKO in round 6. He completely battered Steve Robinson. Robinson took some massive shots. He's got a heck of a chin, I have to say. He took some real big shots on the chin, and he was still standing. It was more exhaustion, I guess, that kind of got him stopped. Like I say, he took a real pasting off of Babic, who again was coming off about a year out the ring. He was coming off a stoppage defeat as well, just like Fandora. But yeah, he returns to winning ways. I was quite surprised it actually went six rounds, because like I say, both guys were really tired up to that point, and I was just wondering, is it going to end up just kind of slowly going the full distance? But yeah, that one was almost free money. I really felt that wasn't going to go the distance, and yeah, of course it didn't. Good win for Babic, like I say. Puts himself back in the mix somewhat. Also on the card, Callum Simpson. He looked unbelievable. He's now 14-0. A KO for him in round 4 against Dulla Mbabe, who's now 34-14 with a draw. I felt that Simpson picked his shots really well. He looked really light on his feet as well. His jab was great. Great shot to put Mbabe over. He looked $1 million. I think, you know, they're talking about it now, him against Zach Chelly. I think that's a good fight, and I really think he's a very talented fighter, Callum Simpson. It all seemed to just come together for him the other night. I know that the guy he was boxing, you know, skill wise wasn't on his level, but he did have 29 stoppage wins, so you got to take him somewhat seriously. Callum Simpson looked brilliant in there. Vidal Riley on the card moved to 11-0, a unanimous decision over 10 for the English cruiserweight title against Mikel Lawal, who's now 17-2. Two back-to-back defeats for Lawal against Isaac Chamberlain and Vidal Riley. Both fights have been really hard to watch. Vidal Riley, you know, was just boxing off the back foot, didn't care at all about making it exciting. It was almost a identical copy of how Isaac Chamberlain beat Mikel Lawal. It was pretty much the same thing, just a complete bore fest. Lawal's coming forward, he's so stiff. He's got really heavy feet, so if you've got if you've got good feet and you've got a good jab, and you know you can keep it on the outside, he's got no chance at all. He can't close that distance, and it was the same thing. He lost, you know, in terrible fashion in both fights, wide on the end with the cards, or wide in the end on the cards. But yeah, he just wasn't in the fight at all, and it's not really his fault that it wasn't exciting. He was trying to make a fight of it, but obviously, you know, that's the way to box. You know, the blueprint has well and truly been laid out. That's the way to box against him, and he's very, very ineffective. Whereas, if you're fighting on the inside, you're mixing it up, you're taking a shot to land one, that is where he has a real good chance. He's a big, strong guy with a big punch, and, you know, both guys, Chamberlain and Riley, we're not interested in playing that game with him. And it's looking now like Riley against Chamberlain could be a fight that we're going to see. But again, I think that one stylistically would be a really, really poor fight. Hope I'm wrong. What else did we have? We had Florian Marku losing his O. He's now 13-1 with a draw. I was really, really happy about this because Chris Congo, friend of the show, 15-2 now. He was coming off, I think, just over a year out the ring as well. A lot of people coming off 1 year layoffs this week. But anyway, came back to win. It was for the vacant IBO Intercontinental Welterweight title. Marku had a point deducted in round 8 for repeated rabbit punches. Yeah, it was a great, great display from Congo. I sent him a text after the fight. You know, just so happy for him, because like I say, I think he expressed it himself. You know, he took a loss to Echo Esserman, and he was put on the shelf. He was put on the shelf longer than he would have liked to have been. And yeah, he was just kind of not getting messed around, but you know, he wasn't the promoter's priority. And then he's come back in a fight like that. He's been thrown in against an undefeated kid. He was the underdog, and he, like I say, he's upset the odds. So I'm really, really happy for him. He's a really nice guy, and yeah, like I say, it seems like people coming off a year layoff are winning fights this week, and in most cases, upsetting the odds. But yeah. Just to reiterate, you know, good performance. Box really smart. kept it at range, looked really good when he did that. I think Marku sometimes kind of lunged in with the left hook and caught Kongo and wobbled him, buzzed him is probably a better word, actually. Buzzed him a couple of times, but Chris Kongo was really switched on, really fit. And yeah, he boxed to a good game plan over the 10 rounds. And yeah, really dominated. So I was really, really happy for him. And yeah, the main event, what a fight for the British and Commonwealth heavyweight titles along with a WBO European. Fabio Wardley, he was on a 16-fight knockout streak. He was 17-0. He's still got that O. Fraser Clark in the other corner, 8-0. He's still got that O. But they don't have their O's in the draw column. A split draw over 12 rounds. Wardley retains the British title. Clark down in round 5. Deducted a point in round 7 as well for repeated low blows. Crazy fight. I felt that Fraser Clark actually started the fight really strongly though. Really sharp. You know, fantastic jab. You could see that, you know, the fundamentals were there. I gave him the first 2 rounds. I gave Wardley round 3. I gave Clark round 4. So after 4 rounds, it's 3-1 Clark. It's in some ways, you know, not the fight I'm expecting. I'm expecting Wardley to start fast, put the pressure on. He's quicker. He's probably stronger. You know, he's younger and he's more explosive. But then, yeah, he was losing 3-1. Obviously gets the knockdown in round 5, like I say, gets a 10-8 there. Wins round 6 for me. Then the point deduction in round 7, he gets another 10-8 on my card. I gave Clark, though, 4 of the final 5 rounds. So on my card, I agreed with the judges pretty much. 113, 113. Like I say, I think the kind of punch of the fight, or the, you know, the best used punch of the fight was definitely Fraser Clark's jab. You know, Wardley was really struggling to get past that, you know, at times in the fight. Like I say, when Wardley did catch Fraser Clark, though, I don't want to say the chin cracked, because he took some big shots and, you know, he was still standing and stuff. But you could see, like, when he caught him, he hurt him bad. And Fraser Clark would really struggle. It'd take him quite a long time to recover. He'd you know, his defense would be really leaky. His feet would go stiff. He was in trouble. Like, honestly, he was in trouble a few times on those ropes. Yeah, Wardley, like I say, around the midway point, you know, that's where he started to take over a bit. So yeah, he had a good sort of middle of the fight, Wardley, but not so much a good start or a good finish. Yeah, I felt that the point deduction as well in the 7th round was quite harsh from the referee, to be honest. And I think it was a bit of a turning point in the fight. Like, it was a bad time to lose that round 10-8. And that's how I had it on my card. So all in all, I think Wardley was quite lucky to probably get to keep the belts, really. Yeah, because without that point deduction, he loses. And yeah, you know, that was a bit unlucky, I felt. And yeah, obviously, aside from the knockdown as well, obviously, well done to him for getting a knockdown and getting that 10-8 round. But the better boxing throughout the entirety of the fight came from Fraser Clark, for sure. So yeah, great fight, full of action. It's a fight I think has probably put quite a lot of miles on both guys' clocks. I'm guessing we're going to probably see it again. I don't think anyone would be opposed to that happening again. Great fight for the British title. Eddie, you saw a couple of highlights. If you want to say something before we move on.
Yeah, it damn sure looked to be an extremely exciting fight. I mean, from what I've seen, like I said, it was only highlights, but I imagine the whole fight was a damn highlight the way it looked. But it was really, really interesting. 2 heavyweights, actually pretty high skill fight for heavyweights, and they didn't look slow or overly plodding, even though they were big guys. It looked pretty good, to be quite honest. I'm gonna probably go back and actually watch the entire fight. You know, I wanted to kind of see different things and how it played out. When you're watching the highlights, you don't really get, especially when it's a quick, because it was like about a 5-minute long video.
you didn't really get the entire, you know, gist of what really went down and how, and just, you know, how good one of, you know, the boxing was and stuff like that. You could see little, you could see it in spots, but not entirely, you know. It would have been, and I would much rather have seen the entire thing. So yeah, definitely going to watch it later on, but yeah, it looked to be a really good fight. A lot, Frazier Clark getting dropped, and then coming back, I guess, you know, throughout the fight and still having enough in the tank to try to get back into it or seize control and, you know, not get stopped in general. You know what I mean? After getting dropped, it's not easy to get back into a fight. So yeah, it was like, it was a lot of good things going on in that fight, and definitely want to go back and take a look at it.
Yeah, for sure. And just finally, the final card to mention of the review part, it went down just yesterday at the 36ers Arena in Adelaide, South Australia, Australia. Over here, friend of the show, former WBO Super Featherweight World Champion Jermell Herrin, 24-5 now. He lost a split decision over 10 rounds for the vacant WBO Global Super Featherweight title to Jackson John England, who's now 16-3. Didn't see the fight, but from what I've heard, it was a very low output fight. Could have gone either way. It was quite a boring fight to watch. And like I say, it was a close fight. I'm not too surprised that the Australian got the nod, obviously, being in Australia. Long way from home for Jermell. And yeah, I don't think Jackson John England had ever been stopped, so they expected, you know, the fight to go the distance. And I hate to say it, because obviously you know how much I think highly of Jermell. He's been on the show, I think, more than any other boxer, you know, of all the boxers we've ever interviewed. But I did, you know, put in the betting group that I've got, we should back Jackson John England on points, and that was 13-2. So people made 6.5 times their stake plus their stake returned, because I just thought it was a really good price. And the price didn't last long. It ended up going down, and I think it went down to 9-2, but we got it at 13-2 if you're in there. And yeah, it was a big upset. So yeah, commiserations for Jermell. I don't know what he's going to do next. Obviously, it was a second fight on his kind of comeback, you know, his comeback career. And yeah, he loses there to a guy who, you know, really and truly shouldn't be able to beat him at all, even in Australia. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the world-ranked American heavyweight contender. It is, of course, Mr. Michael Hunter. Mike, welcome back on the show.
That's right. thank you. I appreciate it.
So, Mike, the last time we had you on was in June of 2022. It's been a long, long time. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Huey Fury, the fight that ended up not happening, no matter how many times it got rescheduled. Let's pick it up, though, from where we left off. You didn't fight at all in 2022 in the end. You become grossly inactive to the point where you lost your number one world ranking with a WBA. Talk me through what happened for those that don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like what you just said, I fought Huey Fury. I mean, I was supposed to fight Huey Fury with Ben Shalom with Boxer, and you know, he just got sick a few times, and I understand why he would, and you know, now he's back, and you know, we could run it if he wants to, but I'm pretty sure he'll probably get sick again. So, I mean, you know, they took me off the ranking from the WBA just because of inactivity. But really, I feel like they should have put me back on there. And I've had, you know, I've had this argument with them for quite some time now. But they shouldn't have took me off. They should have ordered another fight for me to have. In the next, you know, the next person, and he didn't want to fight, then they could have had somebody else, but they didn't do that, and I was removed, and I was, and at that time, I got moved off of the rankings just for being inactive because they couldn't get me a fight as well with a boxer. I was supposed to be that was supposed to be a multi-fight deal, but because the fight never happened, there was no contract pretty much.
Yeah, it's a shame. I'm glad that you've explained that because, like I say, a lot of people don't understand. They think, what's going on with Michael? Like, they don't understand that you had this fight lined up with Huey Fury. He pulls out the fight. You lose a few months there. The next thing you know, it's rescheduled, and then he pulls out again. You lose even more months, and then with that comes the ranking. With that comes no money coming in from boxing for, like, a year, and all of a sudden you're in a bit of a desperate situation, you know? It's crazy how things can change, you know, in such a short space of time. Aside from boxing, Mike, what else has kind of been keeping you busy?
You know, I've just been training. I have been working on getting a fight. But I just, you know, I've been, you know, I did actually fight a couple of times, but, you know, I was trying all different, you know, I talked to Marv Nation. I was talking to all, I was supposed to fight at the Saudi Arabia. You know, I was supposed to fight in a couple other fights, but the main thing is these guys do not, like, want to get in a ring with me. And we'll see, you know, now that I've been put, you know, they didn't really honor the whole thing and put me back in the number one spot, but they did put me back in the top 10. And, you know, so, you know, I'll be climbing up the ranks here soon.
And you did end up returning to the ring, obviously, you mentioned it, in September of 2023, ending a 21-month layoff. You boxed in Mexico, you stopped Miguel Cubos in two rounds, then again, you were back in action 2 weeks ago, again, back in Mexico, back in Jalisco, and this time you stopped Ignacio Esparza. Talk me through that fight there. I think, am I right in saying that you gave away 100 pounds in weight?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the guy was big, but you know, he was experienced. I wasn't able to actually hit him with any real clean shots. I have to give tip my hat to him. I think, I was a little anxious on trying to get him out of there, and he knew that. And, he was a vet in itself. So, he didn't really let me hit him with those knockout shots. I did hurt him a few times, but, you know, a lot of it was to the body. And, he just didn't come out. You know, he forfeited coming into the next round. My trainer had just told me he's done, so step on the gas, and he quit. So my trainer was right about what was going on. And, that was it from there.
And like you said, the good news is that you're now back in the WBA world rankings after all that time out. Does this mean that we'll hopefully see you, as you say, right back right back in the mix at the top?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to definitely see me really active this year. You know, this is the year of the dragon. That's the year I was born. I'm a dragon, so it's the year of the bounty and it's hunting season. So look out for me in May, and that's it.
Has it been frustrating, Mike, sitting on the sidelines while the whole heavyweight division has been, you know, pretty wild in recent times? I mean, we've seen, like, everything go on. Andy Ruiz floating into irrelevance. Anthony Joshua finding old form under a new trainer. Tyson Fury almost losing to a debutant. Daniel Dubois with that controversial body shot on Usyk. Joe Joyce getting knocked off his perch by Zhang twice. Wilder losing to Parker in that huge upset. Dillian White testing positive again. Ajit Kabayel becoming a legit threat. Charles Martin posing more than a threat in what was supposed to be a walk in the park for Jared Anderson. What are you making of this mad division right now?
Man, I like it because it's a lot of moving parts and a lot of some of the filth has, you know, some of the, you know, crappier boxers have been exposed for what they are. And some of the guys like Anthony Joshua have risen, you know. He's gotten better. Over the last, you know, years. But I think it's always just been about his mentality. But, you know, from having harsh knockout of Andy Ruiz, I think that just kind of gave him a little gun shy, but you know, he's been working back at it, and that's what champions do. So, like you said, there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, I'm gonna be in the mix, put my stamp on it here real soon. So, like I said, look out for me in May, and I'm trying to look to stay busy for a couple more fights this year.
And you said there, you know, you spoke about Joshua. He seems like he's got his old form back. I know that you did a bit of sparring with him as well, so that's interesting. You also said that there's a few people that's been exposed. Who were you talking about?
Well, Deontay Wilder was exposed. I think Jared Anderson got exposed. Tyson Fury got exposed. There was a lot of exposure there.
Arslanbek Makhmudov, the big Russian as well, exposed by Khabib.
Joe Joyce. He got exposed. That was a good one. Oh, Joe Joyce. Oh man, that was another one. That was a bad one. That was really bad. But you know, they have a, you know, they're in the business, and they have they're having you know, other opportunities to stay afloat and all that. That's good, but eventually they're all gonna have to deal with me at some point, and you know, that's how I see it, you know.
And you've referred a couple of times to the month of May, Mike. We'll get to that. But obviously, you do have a fight scheduled for just 10 days' time in Uzbekistan. You'll be boxing Artem Suslenkov, a guy who's 10-0, seven of them inside the distance. What do we know about this guy, Mike?
We don't know much. We just know that he, I looked at him, he holds his hands up high. He's 10-0. I think he had a little. He's fought amateur as a Russian. You know, he's not really any international fights. I guess I did my homework. Said I didn't know much, but yeah, I see that he's a little stiff. He doesn't really break at the waist, and we're looking to expose all of that. So. Definitely is going to be a nice little beautiful show, and I'm looking forward to it. And then I will be hopefully, you know, I could continue with that, and I'm going to probably compete with the guy who's the co-main event named Jevilov. I forgot. I don't know his whole name.
Jevilov.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll fight. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But like I said, I have a lot of stuff going on, so I'm not sure if that is going to happen. But yes, I'm supposed to fight Jevilov. I was supposed to fight him actually here on this show, but you know, there again, you know, nobody wants to get exposed. So you know, so now I'm they found me another opponent or whatnot, and hopefully. They said that we were going to fight sometime later on this year, if it all works out.
Right. Okay. So, you've mentioned May. What can you tell us about May?
Well, I can tell you that you guys are going to be in for a good surprise. I can tell you, I'm going to be fighting in May for sure, and it's going to be in Florida. That's another reason why I'm excited. It's in the States. I haven't fought here in the States in a while. I've been fighting in Mexico and, you know, overseas. All these little fights are going to be overseas. So I'm really excited. You know, I have a lot of some family in Florida. So, yeah, it'll be in Florida.
And Mike, obviously, you know, you've got this fight in 10 days' time against an undefeated fighter. That's, you know, mid-April. You're talking about a fight in May. Even if it was at the end of May, that would be just 6 weeks between the two fights. Obviously, you've got an undefeated fighter to take care of all the way in Uzbekistan before this fight, a maximum 6 weeks later, which you say is a big fight. Is that not a bit risky business close together like that with all the traveling?
You know, Not when you're a professional. 6 weeks is plenty enough time. You know, I've been in, I'm in top shape right now. So as long as you, you know, you got to know how to travel and know what to, you know, what to do and stuff like that. You know, I've been, I've had a lot of experience traveling all over the world, all over the planet. So, yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, for sure, it could be risky. But, you know, 6 weeks is plenty enough time for adjustments and all that.
Okay. And I want to get your prediction for the big fight, the big undisputed fight going down next month. Fury, Usyk, obviously you've been in the ring with both men. It's a fight that a lot of people have mixed opinions on. Obviously, I value your opinion massively. Some people are changing their opinion week by week. But how do you see it at this point?
To me, the fight doesn't even, it's not even happening. I know it's getting a little closer, but I, for some reason, I said it before, and I thought that something was going to happen. I knew he was going to prolong it, but I think this is the last time he could prolong it, so maybe they will get in the ring. But I just think that something funny could happen or will happen in this fight. But I know that they're both training very hard.
So who do you think will win?
I think if it comes down to it, I think Usyk's going to get the edge. I said that before because Tyson Fury has had problems with smaller guys who, just smaller guys, period. Not even to use your feet because he had a problem with Otto Wallin, and he hasn't had the best feet, but he's decent, he's basic. And he had a problem with Steve Cunningham. He's had a problem with so I think he's going to have a problem with Tyson. I mean, I think he's going to have a problem with Usyk for sure.
All right, Mike. Well, there we go. That was pretty much my last real question. Just before we wrap things up, if you want to send a little message to the listeners, you want to close out with a little message, like I say, it's always great to have you on. It's been too long. It was back in 2022 the last time you were on, but you are part of the intro. Every week we hear you on the intro, which is great.
Okay, no, that's beautiful. Well, thanks. You know, next time hopefully I'll get a an interview a little faster, but no. like I said, I'm looking to stay active. Really, hopefully all my fans, I want you guys to tune in. It's hunting season and the year of the bounty hunter. So look out for me.
There we go. Listen, Mike, as always, the pleasure's mine. Thanks for your time, and we'll speak again real soon.
Likewise. Love.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part. We're going to start here. Well, we're going to start and end here because it is the only piece of news that we have. But finally, the full undercard has been announced for Fury Usyk. Again, that one to go down in Saudi Arabia. The date is May the 18th, a Saturday. On the undercard, we're going to see a decent fight here, I think, between Ajit Kabayel coming off that fantastic win last time out against Arslan Bekmambetov. He steps in the ring with Frank Sanchez. Both guys 24-0. Could be quite interesting. We're also going to see Moses Itauma, 8-0, stepping in with Ilya Mezenchev, who's 24-3 with 20 KOs. Bit of a step up there for Itauma. He's fighting a much more experienced man. We're also going to see David Naika. I believe he was a good amateur. He's on this card. He's 8-0. He steps in with 12-0. Michael Sates. That's over 8 rounds at cruiserweight. Isaac Lowe gets out on the card as well. Happy for him. Tyson Fury seems to get him on every undercard that he's on. So, brilliant stuff for Isaac Lowe. 24-2 with 3 draws. Stepping in with Hazabullah Akhmadi, who's 16-1. That's an 8-rounder. We're also going to see return to the ring for Sergei Kovalev. 35-4 with a draw. He's back in a 10-rounder at cruiserweight against Robin Safar, who's 16-0. We're going to see Mark Chamberlain getting in there with Joshua Wahab, who's 23-1 with 16 KOs. The African fighter, his nickname is the Wealth Machine. I'm sure he's going to be a hell of a lot more wealthy after this payday. His one loss came to Brit Liam Dillon, so we know him somewhat well over here. Also on that card, we're going to see Joe Caldina defending his IBF super featherweight world title against the IBO champion Anthony Kakachi. That'd be a good one there. We're going to see Wales against Ireland, and yeah, obviously Jai Oppertai in that rematch for the vacant IBF cruiserweight world title against Maris Bradis, and then obviously the main event, Alexander Usyk, Tyson Fury for the undisputed heavyweight world titles. What an unbelievable card that is. That is a card for the hardcores. But anyway, that brings the news part to a close. It's now time for the preview part. Let's start here with this one. It goes down tomorrow at the Red Owl Boxing Arena in Houston, Texas, USA. It's going to be live on DAZN. We're going to see friend of the show, Ernesto Mercado, 14-0 with 13 KOs. He got a mention, the 22-year-old, in part one, because I said Zolesani Ndongan is the only guy to have took him the distance. Well, this time he gets in with Diana Berrio, who's 22-4 with one draw. Never been stopped. Can Mercado become the first man to stop him? The only bad thing is, though, he's lost four of his last six fights, but they've all been in good company to undefeated fighters. He's been a pro since 2010, so yeah, much more experienced as a pro, the Colombian. Could be interesting. All the best to Ernesto. Moving now to Germany at the Frankenstolz Arena. This one is a fight I'm just going to give a small mention to. It's for the WBC International Super Middleweight title. I want to wish all the very best to our man Jack Cullen. Little Levers meet Cleaver, 22-5 with a draw. He steps in with the undefeated Luka Plantich, who's 7-0. It's over 10 rounds there at super middleweight. All the best to Jack Cullen. Not a friend of the show, never been on, but happy for him. Like I say, he's always slung in these fights in the away corner. And I tell you what, he's a good fighter. He's a very good fighter. And he's had a hard career, and I'd love to see him upset the odds once again here. What else do we have? We're going to move now to another part of Germany at the Stadthalle in Falkensee, Brandenburg. Probably saying all of that wrong, but this one has to get a mention. It's for the vacant IBF World Super Welterweight title, over 12 rounds, of course. Bakram Murtazaliev, 21-0, steps in with former world champion Jack Kalkai, 33-4. Moving now to the Fontainebleau in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. This one's going to be live on DAZN Saturday night. We're going to see friend of the show, Sky Nicholson, 9-0, stepping in with Sarah Mahfoud, who's 14-1. It's for the vacant WBC featherweight world title, over 10 twos. Of course, I want to wish all the very best to Sky Nicholson. Be fantastic for her to win this fight. It's obviously the biggest fight of her career on paper and in reality. Sarah Mahfoud only has one loss. It was on points to Amanda Serrano. You would expect Sky Nicholson to probably win the fight on points, but Sarah Mahfoud says Sky Nicholson has done a lot of talking. Not many people know, but I wasn't given sufficient notice for that Amanda Serrano fight, and she's pretty confident going in against Sky Nicholson. So yeah, like I say, I hope Sky wins, and it will be another world champion that we've had on this show to that ever-growing list. Also on the card for the vacant WBC Continental America's Super Featherweight title, Mark Castro, 11-0, back in a 10-rounder against Abraham Montoya, 22-5 with a draw. Galal Yafai as well, the Olympic champion, 6-0, stepping in with Augustin Gauto, who is 21-1. That one's over 10 for the WBC International Flyweight title. Also, a battle of the undefeated prospects, Diego Pacheco, 20-0. Great to see him back in the ring. He steps in with Sean McCowman, who's 15-0. That one's over 12 for the WBO International and WBC USA Super Middleweight titles. And then the main event, I'm really looking forward to this. We had him on the show a couple weeks back, Richardson Hitchens, 17-0, widely regarded as one of the best fighters in the world that doesn't have a title. That's a big call there. I don't really want to call him a prospect because I think he's very much a contender. So let me just maybe rephrase and say one of the best contenders in the world with no belt. I don't know if that is actually saying anything different. But anyway, the point being, very good fighter, doesn't yet have a belt. He's so highly rated. You know, he's nailed on to be a future world champion. And it's just going to be great to see him back in action. He did say to me a couple of weeks ago when we had him on, he wants to go for the knockout here. That'd be a big statement against Gustavo Lemos in the other corner. The Argentinian fighter, 29-0. We've seen him stop Lee Selby. You know, he hasn't really built off of that. I think he's only had one or two fights since, you know, since beating Lee Selby. But he's looking to move to 30-0 if he can get past Richardson Hitchens. Great stylistic matchup. Obviously, I'm riding with Hitchens. Hopefully, he wins. And yeah, I think it's some kind of eliminator, if I'm not mistaken. So it'd be great to see Richardson Hitchens make a statement here and move on. And I mean, I'm really interested, actually, to see those odds for the knockout, if they're actually up. I do want to just have a little look. They should be up by now. Yeah, KO is only 2-1 for Hitchens. That's interesting. And Gustavo Lemos, there's some serious value in him. 9-1 for the KO, 14-1 for the points win. That is some serious value, but I'm not saying it's going to happen. That is it. I was almost going to move to something that wasn't even there. I've flown through part two on my own without even coming to you, Eddie. But yeah, in part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news, which just pretty much was explaining the undercard for that mammoth fight card that's going down in Saudi next month. Boy, oh boy, you don't want to miss that one. And then we just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 442 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A massive shout out to heavyweight contender Michael Hunter for being this week's special guest. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That is about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we'll see you all again same time next week.